Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell, your co-host, and across the internet from me, chief TV critic of The Hollywood Reporter, live in person from TCA, the Death March with Cocktails in LA. It's Tim Goodman. Hi.
Hey, Jason.
How's it going? How are you surviving? Hold it, hanging in there?
Well, just that we're able to talk is good. Day 16 of TCA 2016 and day 17 in the hotel. Finally checking out tomorrow. That'll be 18 days and I am toasted.
I bet. Yeah, but good Lord.
It's been better than expected, though. I have to say that I think I handled this one better. I think I just did stuff that was savvier, and I think I have more energy. Plus, it was mostly a fun tour as far as insight to new shows and talking to executives and such.
No, it seemed good, and it seems like you have held up, because there have been other times where you get broken at some point, and then it was you were a broken man going for the rest of it, and you've seemed like you've kept it level. It goes back to like not going to those sessions that you don't want to go to, and not doing too much, and just kind of being able to pace yourself.
Yeah, I think. Sorry, coughing into the microphone. Everybody hates that, but I think that I've been here long enough to be allowed to do that. But yeah, I think part of the pacing thing was good. And again, I can't sort of underscore how important it is to either be excited about shows or to have some curiosity settled on some shows, and then also see some crazy flame ups.
So let's get into it. You wrote a bunch of pieces for THR, your diary, your journal. One man's journal in a hotel room. Let's start with broadcast. You wrote a piece called Safe and Familiar is the Best Way Forward for Struggling Broadcast Networks. This is our friend, the mass scheduler, kind of pointed at this story and was like, see, I told you. It's like broadcast networks being what they are and not trying to be something they aren't.
Right. They can't be cable. They can't compete that way. If they want to compete as far as on an artistic level, they can do that through comedies, but they can't do it through dramas other than to be entertaining. And there's nothing wrong with that. As we've talked many times, it's great to have a show or three that you can just turn your brain off and have a good time. This year, I think it's going to be Designated Survivor with Kiefer Sutherland for me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. That looks like a lot of fun. And yeah, I mean, this is so anything jump out at you from the should we just jump to CBS now? You wrote a piece. One of your journal entries was that diversity is not CBS's brand. It sounds like the CBS panel was a whipping of the guy who was there for CBS. Like, that sounds like that was just a bloodletting. Is that about right?
That was about right. It was awesome. I wanted to immediately binge it again. I joked that if they had that on, if I could just watch the video on demand, I would have watched it all over again. They deserve what they got. It's a very white and a very male network, but as I wrote in my piece, that's their brand. So what I found fascinating about it is that they had no, fix for it. They had a very weak apology. And to me, that hinted at their, yeah, we hear what you're saying. Give us a little bit of a lashing, and we're going to do business as usual. It's not their brand.
Yeah, I was thinking if they're the network of old. I mean, they're network demographic. They're older and whiter, and you know that's kind of their target audience. So, but even then, I feel like you would have to buy into the idea that. Like white people only ever want to see white people on television, and that only read things or watch things written by white people and directed by white people and men and not women. And it's just, I that's where it all kind of comes apart. But you're right. It's sort of like CBS is not going to get dunned for, being, you know, doing another version of JAG. That just seems to be what they do.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think that they, you know, they have to be judged on what they do. I think what they do is they do it well, but there's still this glaring oversight. You know, I think when you have a critic of color who'd said to me, you know, this is like the Trump network, I think it's true. You know, there's an audience that they're going for. That doesn't mean all their people who watch it are racist or anything, but that's just the nature of how they send. I went back 16 years. In that column, if people read it, and there's very few people of color in leads, and that's the key. You can have a lot of diversity in your ensemble cast, but your leading actors and actresses, when your leads are the face of the show, that's what you're presenting to your audience. And that's, I think, very telling in a subtle way.
Yeah. LL Cool J, right? I mean, that's kind of the...
Yeah. There's one of few. They've done better recently, but definitely one of a very small group.
Yeah. Anything jump out at you at all from any of the networks that struck you other than Designated Survivor?
Well, I think that there are going to be some things to watch. But for me, mostly it was, I thought they were on brand. I like the fact that they look like they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and it took them a long time to get to this point, and I'm happy they're there. One show I did not see, but others saw and marked as sort of like, wow, I thought that was going to be terrible, and it's kind of intriguing, is the remake of TV series version of The Exorcist. That might be kind of interesting.
What about, so on brand, so like the CW is full of superheroes, right? That's their brand.
Yeah, and like, yeah, I mean, to be fair, if you want to say did something jump out from the network level, yeah, No Tomorrow for me on CW is going to be one of my favorites. It's completely on brand, partly because it, and I had a discussion earlier today with somebody at the CW about how it's not like, you know, you don't have to be the network of superheroes and quirk or whatever. It has to be like a vibe. There's a vibe to the channel that's connected that I think that people, if you watch it, you get what they're about. And that's branding. And for me, No Tomorrow fits in with Jane the Virgin, which fits in with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Looks like with iZombie or iZombie. The Flash. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can definitely put the vibe of The Flash into the vibe of No Tomorrow, this upcoming series. And I think, you know, to me, if that ends up, I need to see other stuff before I can make a judgment. But if No Tomorrow ends up being like my favorite network show, I mean, that's kind of amazing how far the CW has come, because it's just been like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and then Jane the Girlfriend prior to that. They're doing really well. So I'm excited for them.
Boy, you and your love affair with the CW, you're going to get a call from some other network saying, Tim, why don't you write about us like you write about the CW?
Yes, we're BFFs, definitely.
Okay, can you explain to me Amazon's strategy? Explain it to me.
In a nutshell, I'm not sure there is one. And in a lower gradation of that, I'm not sure they care if there's one. That's the weird thing. I've got great feedback behind the scenes of people in the industry. I'll probably end up doing something about that a little bit later. But it's people who do business with them are a little mystified that, you know, it's you make a show, you put it on there, and it's impossible to find, even if it's a great series. Mm. And even when you find it, it's not like its own designated shelf. Like, hey, look at us. We're Amazon Studios. We make this amazing slew of series from Transparent to Catastrophe and on, you know, Man in the High Castle, you know, Mozart in the Jungle. No, you they're mixed in with acquisitions or reruns from everybody else's channels. And it's like, guys, like, what's going on here? How do you stand out in this crowded field? And I honestly don't know if that's really what they're trying to do, which is mystifying. So, I mean, if people read my piece on that, I think they'll get a sense of like, wow, this is not, it doesn't seem to be urgent for them. But what I've heard back from the creative community is that's a problem. And I mean, that sort of bears watching.
Right, because at some point, who do you want to be in business with? I mean, if the choice is you could go with either Netflix or Amazon, then if they feel like they're going to get lost at Amazon, then maybe the choice tilts away from Amazon at that point. Because Amazon, I mean, you were tweeting about how it's like it's Prime Video, like is it its own thing? Is it really just part of Amazon's larger strategy? It's because it's kind of this offshoot of Amazon's membership plan. It makes it a lot harder to get your hands around what it even is as a service.
Yeah, and I think the shocking thing is that it would not be hard for them to differentiate. They actually have the names, they have the slogans and stuff in place. They would have the money to do the promotion, but they're not, which tells me that the overall brand is and will remain Amazon rather than saying, like, here is a department inside of Amazon that makes original and really good television shows. And if they're not going to go out of their way to promote that, it's a little troubling. I would add, since you brought it up, that the other part of the trend thing that I learned from down here is that I think some premium cable outlets are secretly happy that they're getting new feedback from people, sort of like this Amazon thing's new, but also that there's been people who do business with Netflix, and some of these cable channels are saying, yeah, we're getting people coming in and saying, yeah, I'm not so sure we're keen on spending a year plus making a show, getting them all done, having the cast super excited, and then having one day where it's in the zeitgeist and it gets dropped into the world.
Yeah. I see it, right? And I want to talk about John Landgraf, because I saw somebody say he's like doing his mayor of television bit. I'm not sure if that was you or not, but there's definitely critic friends, if it wasn't you, and he had slides and he was talking about peak TV, but he said that Netflix's release schedule is unsustainable because literally they would fill the earth with shows. And there definitely seems to be some pushback. I mean, obviously from him, he's competing with them, but that how many shows can Netflix do? And the more shows they do, the more the shows get lost. And you don't even realize, we've talked about a couple of shows on this podcast that Netflix seemed to put almost no effort into even promoting. They just sort of slide them on the network and move on to the next thing.
Yeah, and I think that they have money and they continue to make shows and they continue to keep their brand up by being gigantic. But at some point, you lose that quality touch. You know, I think I think John Landgraf, as he is wont to do, said words like bespoke and how...
Didn't he say like we're curators of television?
Yeah, I definitely have said that they're curators before, and... you know, that's what they do. They take care of their people. And I think they're going out of their way to distinguish that as like, yeah, we might not have 71 shows, but we have the ones that we do. We're hands on. We love you people. We're going to give you feedback and we're going to talk about you every week and we're going to nurture you and you'll be in this environment where we do everything to get you noticed.
So what else did you get out of Landgraf's thing? I mean, it sounds like he thinks the peak TV is just going to get peakier for the next couple of years. Did you just become exhausted even listening to that?
Oh, yeah. It was classic. We were just laughing. I mean, he's basically saying, and he's right, because they're tracking the numbers. We're going to be at 450 scripted shows, like, basically any minute now. And then in the middle of or the end of this year and the beginning of 2017, we will be on target for 500 scripted series. And, you know, I've written before and I've written again here, it's not sustainable. Someone's going to fall. And I think the side story is, even if you don't fall Amazon/Netflix, the subtle downside of this growth is you're not being nurtured and people are not taking care of your shows and promoting them in a way. It's just like, here's more glop that we're going to screw, plop onto the ether and have people stream. And I think that's not what a show creator and stars want. So, but it's 500 shows is laughable. We cringed. but I felt like I laughed because I felt like I had told him, I had said in print many times, as after the words peak TV were being used, I was like, it's catchy, people, but it's not actually true, because a peak means you've hit the peak. Like, we've peaked. It's peak TV. It's not. We were not peaking. We were climbing. It was, you know, so, and he said, well, I missed it by a pretty big wide margin. He thought there was going to be a bursting of the bubble and it was going to recede, and it's not going to. So we're looking at, I don't know, but you know, if we're just talking about Landgraf's predictions, he's saying, we wouldn't have even a significant reduction of shows until as late as late 2018. So yeah, don't plan any vacations, Tim.
No, no, I don't think so. So it's contradictory too, because the more shows there are, the more, the harder it is to find them, which means the more important promotion is. So if you've got a combination of flooding the market with shows and not doing proper promotion, I'm not sure how that is good for anyone, unless you're somebody like Netflix or Amazon that is, they're making it up in volume. It's like, it just all accumulates to the brand and they don't really care whether you watch this one or that one, as long as you keep spending your money on their service.
Right. There's certainly gradations to the problem and how to solve it, which is interesting. That's why we're here. You can get a little think tank, when you're down here. And one of them is, I think Netflix is pretty confident in their brand of saying, like, people are always talking about us. People are signing up, and they are used to our user interface. We promote our shows from the inside of the website and the service, and all that anyone needs to do is know that, yeah, the show's on Netflix, and then you get in the Netflix universe and you click on it. It's probably right there. The opposite of that strategy is lack of a brand within Amazon, which we just talked about, where you go into their site, move past all the socks and the books and the Kindles and the cheap jewelry and whatever you need, toothpaste, and then you get to Prime Video and you get into the Prime Video thing, and there's not very much distinction between Amazon Originals and movies and television that they bought and put on there.
So let me ask you this. We've been talking about how you've been talking to creative type people about not feeling the love. Is this about the creators not feeling the love, or is this also about the producers of these shows feeling like they don't have a chance to succeed? I'm just wondering how much of this is feeling like they want to be seen versus like the actual like business decision of why are we making this? Why are we investing in making this product if nobody knows that it's going to exist?
Oh, I think it's on the wanting to be seen part. Everybody's happy about the money. Everybody seems to be happy about where they are. No one's going to say they don't want work for Amazon or Netflix or Hulu. Hulu is making very big strides on their own. I just think it's very quiet. I don't think it's anybody on the record yet. It's just cable channels feeling like they've heard from people who'd make shows elsewhere who are now open to making their next show in the cable world.
I see. And these are presumably creative people who have enough pull that they, it's not like they're hoping to get the chance to make a show. They're going to make shows. They're really good at it. And they have the ability to chart their own course and say, maybe I'll do cable instead of streaming next time.
Yeah. And I think one of the other options is Hulu. I think you're going to see the rise of Hulu for sure, because they go on a week by week basis. It's very much like a television show.
Right.
They've gotten rid of their free part. They're upping their subscription profile. I think they need new originals, and they have money, so they're a good outlet as well. I think that there's just a little bit of jealousy about not being in the zeitgeist in the world where it's kind of a weird situation, as you can imagine, Jason. It's like, yeah, everybody's got money now. Everybody wants to throw money at you to put a show on. A lot of places like Amazon and Netflix and Hulu and whatnot will let you do pretty much whatever you want. They'll green light outrageous projects or incredibly audacious and challenging projects. But the difference is, after that, people want to be, once they get the money and once they get the show made, they naturally want people to see it and you can, and talk about it. And they want to hear that talking. We've heard a number of people say, yeah, I guess we're supposed to say that we don't read reviews, but we read everything. And, they're paying attention. They have their finger on the pulse of what's going on in the sort of the chatter world of criticism and online Twitter followers. And they just want more of that. That's only natural that you would want to be getting feedback if you made a show that everybody's talking about. But sometimes people can't talk about it in the same way because no one's following it week to week. Everybody's binging it in some way. So I think they just want to be noticed and they want to be in the conversation.
So that would theoretically lead to a position where Amazon and Netflix might find it harder to get some talent on their shows, right? That is that the theoretical end game here, where they'd either need to pay even more so that they really like the money, or settle for sort of lesser or undiscovered talents?
Well, it's interesting. I think that the next frontier of this issue, if it keeps popping up, is do you create an overall deal, meaning does Netflix want you for your next two projects? Or right now they don't really care, but will they care if, you know, series creator X, who does really good work, takes his show, makes a show for Netflix, and it drops, and it got great reviews, but no one's talking about it. Can he also or she also go to HBO or Stars or Hulu and make, you know, same creator, make another show, and then just sort of be more invested in the dialogue each week and talking about that show more? I think the worry is that places like Netflix, where it gets dumped, the one thing that they need to be careful of is that they have some control over the people they're paying for their content, and that those people don't go someplace else and do all their press and say all these good things and then cut overall deals there. Like, yeah, we still want to make a show for Netflix, but I just signed a deal where my next two shows are going to be on HBO. I think that's when Netflix will start worrying about its business model.
Now, for their part, Netflix seems completely unrepentant about their strategy of dropping everything in season sized chunks on a day. Like, right, I saw that they don't think there's a problem with it.
No, they don't, and they're certainly, I like their consistency, and they're speaking from a position of power. I wonder how that's going to change if things get weaker. The only time that they ever change that policy is if there's some kind of trouble in the production process, like with The Get Down, where you're going to get the first half of the season first, and then there's going to be a little bit of a lull, and then you'll get the second half. Which I think will benefit The Get Down if it's good, because people will talk about it, and then they'll watch the next part when it comes out.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this, and I definitely, it hurts me that we don't get to talk about it on a week-by-week basis, but it seems to be working for Netflix. I mean, it may also end up being that Netflix, the stuff Netflix orders is the stuff that's really, really, really bingeable, and stuff that works better played out week over week, just they won't take that stuff to Netflix because they know that's not how it's going to be released. I don't know.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, but Netflix, as you said, they're not complaining. They're not going to change their tactics. And I think their feeling is that, hey, everybody's talking about Stranger Things, and everybody's talking about The Night Of on HBO. So they both have something people are talking a lot about this summer. And that's their argument for why would we change it.
Right, and you can make the argument. I can see the argument that Stranger Things was evangelized by people who binged the whole thing and loved it, and that perhaps if it was just spooling out week by week, that wouldn't have happened. I totally can see that argument too. And they are in a position of power, and they like the way they like the way they do it. So I guess fair enough.
Yeah.
So now, okay, we talked about some of these streaming services. So did you go to the CBS All Access thing?
No, I didn't go to that.
You stayed away. You didn't put on your Star Trek ears and go to the CBS didn't. All Access.
I knew there was going to be lots of news for you to binge out from other people, but I had to write some stuff during that.
Yeah, that's probably fine. I suspect that many of your colleagues. I mean, I watched the Twitter stream. In fact, it was amusing to see at least one person was tweeting about how excited the other critics were about it. Where it was like, I can tell the Star Trek fans in here by all the questions they're asking. And then this particular critic didn't care.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
It was pretty amusing. So I bring up CBS All Access. Yeah, Star Trek. There was Star Trek news. Brian Fuller was there. They are really committed to the slow rollout of information, which is kind of funny. So they're going to keep the fans guessing for a while. Also, I get the sense that they're still figuring out how to make the show. Like they haven't started shooting it yet. So, but I wanted to ask about All Access because they seem to be acting as if they're in a position of power, even though they're not. Like they announced that they're going to they're going to release the Star Trek stuff. It's going to have 12 minutes of commercials in it. But for the, on the paid service, they're toying with the idea of doing a commercial-free version that costs more, but they seem to have nothing concrete about that. And it's like, you know, Les Moonves, I appreciate his business acumen and figuring that, you know, the nerds will pay for it and sit there and watch commercials for 12 minutes an hour. But I'm not convinced, given what Hulu did, I'm not convinced that they should be so... so lax in considering an ad-free tier for their service.
Yes, I join you in your dubiousness.
Right? It's just, it sounds like something that you do if you're the king, and they're the king of certain aspects of television, but as a fledgling streaming service, it perplexing, right? That they haven't, there must be a push and pull there, because obviously so much of what they do is ad based, that they may not be able to contractually find a way. Like when Hulu launched with ad free and they said it's ad free except for these five shows where it's not ad free. I don't know, right. But they're opening themselves up to, I mean, there are going to be a lot of frustrated people who pay for CBS All Access, and their first exposure to it's going to be Star Trek, and they're going to realize they're paying $6 a month or $7 a month for something that they have 12 minutes of unskippable ads during the show.
Yes, it seems like they came from a position of having confidence in something that they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
The confidence of the unexpected.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. What have we not talked about that you think has been interesting from the last week at TCA? Anything?
Yeah, a couple of things that I thought were interesting. I think for sure I think I said before that there's good buzz for Westworld on HBO. Did we talk about that?
Well, I don't know if we did. I don't know. I know it was Troubled, and then you finally got to see more of it.
Yes, and for those who saw it, I couldn't do it because, surprise, the Wi-Fi in my room wouldn't work to do it. HBO's is the most sensitive to Wi-Fi power, maybe because they're, I don't know, sending so much packets through. Who knows? But
good. Boop, 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 boop. Tech talk.
Thank you. Thank you. I think what I've seen, like I said, from the, I think there's good shows on brand from the network side. And the latest we saw was the CW and No Tomorrow. I think people should put a flag down on that one. And also, I think for FX, which was here, they have two really interesting new series coming out, and Better Things from Pamela Adlon and Louis C.K. is the thing. It's a very unique perspective from her, and about parenting. It's a show that I think crosses whether you have kids or don't have kids. She's very funny. It's touching. It's real. It's emotional and raw. But the one that I'm excited about is Atlanta from Donald Glover, which I've already seen three of the four that they're putting out now, and I will be doing that review in the like next week or so. And it's I would say that on some level, Donald Glover's kind of coming out just as Aziz Ansari's Master of None brought him out. This is going to bring out Donald Glover as kind of like the next brilliant artist. I really do.
That's great. Bring it on.
So look forward to that.
I was happy to see the You're the Worst panel happened. I'm ready for that to come back.
Yeah, and The Strain is coming back, and they did a couple of victory laps with The People versus O.J. Simpson and The Americans, which is nice for them. But I think that there's good things coming up on HBO. I think there's good things coming up on FX for sure. And it's a little bit of a tease because it's so far in the distance, but a lot of people have shown us stuff that they have coming up in the deep future, so the next 6 months or a year. Including today was, of course, Showtime talking about Twin Peaks.
Oh yeah. That's a 2017. That was the stuff you put in the bank, and you know, you get that information and then you just sort of save it away. And when you write about that show in 6 months, maybe you've got some information from today.
Yeah. They showed us, they didn't have a panel, but they showed us like the critics only in the ballroom. They're not putting it on the site. It was a behind the scenes B-roll of the actors talking about the show, which is funny because they were all like, yeah, it's really great. That was basically what it is. I'm like, oh, well, I take your word for it then. 12 actors sure. who are at a show that are being paid to
Sounds
be in.
Good.
Awesome. But there was no footage. They don't know how many episodes it's going to be when they get it. They haven't really seen anything yet. All of those are really big red flags to me. But as I said before, that's cynical because, you know, this was the same process where the FX hadn't seen any of the Louis stuff. And when it came in, it was great. So who knows? It's coming. It's coming at some point, but there's not much to tell on that. And they did announce three new comedy blocks for Showtime. So I'm happy for them that they're replenishing their half hour stock on Showtime if you're into that kind of stuff.
All right. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is just the Olympics. You know, you're in a hotel room, mm-hmm. but you wrote a piece about the Olympics. And how do you think it's going?
I think it's fine. My perspective is skewed though, because I get to write this thing because I do it every 2 years, how much I love the Olympics. And this time I'm trapped in a hotel and I can watch almost nothing on television. I catch glimpses when we're out or when we're on. I'm coming back to my room to change to go somewhere. So I've done most of my viewing through NBCOlympics.com. So I've been doing online stuff. It gets spoiled a little bit more, which is fine. But I'm happy with it. I know that people complain, but they always complain. I'm happy for it. I just think I'm not watching as much as I would have watched had I not been stuck in this hotel for 17 days.
The good news is that, like Press Tour, the Olympics go on forever. So when you get home, there'll be lots of Olympics still to see. My take on it is that I feel like, even though it's not perfect, a lot of the technology is still kind of in process. I feel like Comcast has realized that the Olympics can be like a many, many platform thing. And that I feel like we've got, maybe not today, but in 4 years, 2 years, 6 years, something like that, they're gonna figure it out. Like, the Olympics is all on demand, you know, streams and live streams of whatever you want to watch, and then the primetime recap show, and like that the internet is made for the Olympics. And I feel like they'll get there. They're not quite all the way there yet, but I feel like they're getting there. They're doing a lot better than they have in the past. Like, they know the destination, even if they haven't quite executed it well quite yet.
Good. Well, I'm happy to catch up on what I've been missing. But as far as my Olympic experience, it's not as good as I had hoped for, because I'd be at home.
Yeah. Well, you'll get home. You'll unpack. You'll be able to use.
Do you promise?
I promise. It's going to happen. You're going to get home. Actually, one of the only question I have from a listener is, somebody asked, do you do something when you get home, as you're like, thank goodness I'm home, I can now do this thing after being locked in a hotel for 17 days. Is there like a place you go, or something you buy, or something you drink, or whatever it is that's like, you're now I'm back at home?
Oh, I definitely get back in my bed, which is, I have the most awesome bed, so I'm happy to back into that. But also, I'm going to go on a little mini vacation to Vancouver, so I will just be off of my phone. I will not have people. I will not be in a freezing ballroom, and I will not have people spinning me on ratings and quality. And I can take a break from watching screeners in my room.
That's a shame. How will you survive without all of those things?
I know. It'll be good to get away for a while. I mean, just a brief while, unfortunately, but I'll take it.
Let's wrap it up here then, and we'll let you go back to your freezing ballroom for a few more hours before they unlock your chains and they let you go.
That's it. Yes, I have one last panel on Homeland, and then I got to do a bunch of writing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like the TCA is Columboing you. They're giving you the one last panel.
Exactly. And on that note.
That's right. Okay. Podcast at tvtalkmachine.com. Tweet us, Bastard Machine for Tim, J Snell for me, or TVTM for the podcast. Facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. Those are the ways to get in touch with us. Send us your feedback. We will pick it up in the next episode and read a bunch of your letters and all of that and get back to it. Tim, thank you. I'm glad you survived. Have a good time going home, and have a good time on your mini vacation, and we'll check back in next time.
All right. Thanks, Jason. Talk to everybody then.